ever since Disney has bought Star Wars and Marvel, there have been questions from the fan community. What exactly is an Inhuman? How is it different than a mutant? What's the expanded universe? What language do Wookiees speak? Are Storm and Black Panther still married? The answer to all these questions and much more on WDWNT On The Air's new show, Nerd Alert, with your host, Joe Hogarty.
Hello and welcome to episode number 6 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me are Patrick Hackett.
YOLO.
And Ron Deanna.
Aloha.
Hello, guys. And let's get right to the news. And one of the big news stories for this week is that Daredevil adds Jon Bernthal as Marvel's new Punisher for Daredevil Season 2 on Netflix.
Obviously most famous for playing Shane on The Walking Dead. I came into The Walking Dead a little bit late, so I'm just at the tail end of the Shane years. Definitely an intense dude, and that's what you need to play Punisher.
But he's no Dolph Lundgren.
I mean, who is?
And he's no Thomas Jane.
Thankfully, he's no Thomas Jane.
There was nothing wrong with, I think, the Thomas Jane casting. I just think the first, I'm not gonna say the first Punisher movie. The first was Thomas Jane in both of them.
No,
I never saw War Journal, so I don't know.
War Journal I really liked War Journal actually.
The beginning of Jane's Punisher was actually pretty decent. Travolta just made a horrible villain.
Yes, agreed. And as much as I love the city of Tampa, I just don't think the Punisher belongs in Tampa.
No, he's a New York character.
Yeah, I think he's going to do a great job as Punisher and Frank Castle. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And we've always seen, like, comics with the Punisher going against Daredevil, and those are going to be some classic battles that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, this is the place where you need the Daredevil, you need the Punisher is in Hell's Kitchen, New York. And this dark, gritty part of the MCU that's not brightly colored like other parts, I mean, this is the domain for the Punisher.
Yeah, he's going to fit really well and really well into the feel of the show with that borderline R feel, not a hard R.
Yeah.
And it'll work, and I think it still leads more credence to that concept that Season 2 is the assassins going after him. Because, I mean, you know, Punisher started as a gun for hire. In a really horrible book. That Spider-Man, what is it, 129? Or is that the Gwen Stacy era?
Yeah, it's in that one. My buddy has the issue. It's a hard issue to find, but yeah, the Punisher's origin story is a fun one.
And it could lead to his own series, and I definitely could see if it has the same sort of vibe as Daredevil and the violence. Mm-hmm. That would be a great Punisher, for sure.
And you have to wonder, as we get more characters in this version, I almost want to call it like the Hell's Kitchen version of the MCU, how they will eventually connect to the greater MCU.
Yeah, if they'll fall over into Infinity War.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, what really is Civil War. Because they're not supers, they're vigilantes, so there's a lot on the line for them there.
Yeah, it's still the same thing. I think, you know, characters like Daredevil's appearance are kind of more than anything going to be Tony's motivation for pushing forward the Registration Act. I mean, we're assuming that's the story.
Assuming, yes.
Well, unfortunately, I think it's too late, though, for Civil War just because of that they're filming now. I mean, maybe they can kind of surprise us and throw them in there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
All right, so let's get on to another topic here. And recently E3 has been going on. And There's been a couple of Star Wars games announced, Star Wars Battlefront, and also Disney Infinity 3.0 showed some video of Rise of the Empire, and it showed Boba Fett as the newest Star Wars character to come to Disney Infinity.
Oh, I mean, I was sold on Infinity before they even announced it was Star Wars. I think it's a great, great game, and I think with the Star Wars edition, this is going to be the best seller. And I tried to go register and get my special edition pre-order in, but nobody's taken it yet, so that's I just got to wait for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm very excited about Infinity. My wife would tell you that I get all these Infinity figures, I get excited, and then I don't play the game. The gameplay has been really hard for me to stick with, so I'm hopeful Star Wars would give me more of a reason. I'm thankful because this one will allow me to keep my PS3, as the other games we talk about, you might have to upgrade.
That's true, and getting into that, that's Battlefront, which is PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And yeah, it looks pretty good. I mean, what I've seen of it, and I'm familiar with DICE. They do Battlefield, and I've been playing the Battlefield series for a while. Yeah, Battlefield's definitely different from Call of Duty in where it's got vehicles, and it's a bit of a slower-paced game. It's not a run-and-gun. You have to use strategy, and I think we're going to see a lot of that in Star Wars Battlefront 2. They showed the multiplayer for Hoth, and that looked pretty good. And they also showed a map with Tatooine, and I think that was co-op, and that actually looked a little fun, too.
Was that Tatooine or Jadar or whatever that planet was?
They confirmed that it's Tatooine. I thought it was that planet, too. I thought it was the new one, but it is Tatooine.
Yeah, it looks like a Battlefield game, or Battlefront. Battlefront's the name of the game. Battlefield is the game that they've worked on prior, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, it just, on the one hand, it's a really cool idea, and I'm very, very excited about it. On the other hand, it looks like so many other games that are out there, it's just a different setting. It looks like so many first-person shooters.
Yeah, the first person looked really great. I didn't love the third-person view when they cut to that. It looked beautiful. I really thought it looked great. But it's going to be interesting to see like what sets it apart. Okay, you have Star Wars weapons and you're fighting, you know, stormtroopers, but it did look, you know, exactly like playing Battlefield 1942 from 13 years ago with better graphics aside from that. The hero characters are supposedly going to be like random inserts that sometimes you spawn as one of them. That's going to be interesting to play because I never liked the hero thing in Warcraft 3. It kind of never played well for me as a concept, so see how it works in this.
Yeah, I'm interested in that because it seems like you're bouncing all over the scene, at least in the trailer video. I mean, I don't know if that was just to show multiple forms of gameplay, but it seems like you're just taking different characters. When I play these games, I kind of want to be one character, you know, create somebody and kind of stick with it and build, and maybe they find out I have enough midichlorians and I can, you know, be a Jedi.
Yeah, I think in the video they basically were just showing you different points of view because they kept flipping from the Empire to the Rebels. Yeah, I'm not sure about how the whole hero thing is going to play out. I think at the very end it probably looks a little better than what we're actually going to see. But who knows? I mean, it would be kind of cool to see how that works with Vader going after Luke. But it's definitely something new that I've never seen. Like, I know, Ron, you said that you've seen that in Warcraft.
I mean, it wasn't the same, but it was, you know, when you're trying to play with a ton of different units, suddenly this hero class upsets a board's balance. And this seems even more random than something like you have to build specifically. They haven't said how it's going to work. All they say is, you know, it's going to be somewhat random. Maybe you do something to trigger it on your next respawn or on somebody's next respawn. But all of a sudden you're playing and Vader comes out. Everybody around you is going to die. I mean, unless somebody gets an AT-AT and shoots at him.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought about that too. And then the inner nerd really came out and I'm like, you can't have Vader and freaking Luke doing battle there. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, my nerd rage came out why is Luke in the Jedi costume on Hoth?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, mine too.
Just went to the who cares line.
Yep. Mm. Alright, let's get into the next batch of news, and the next batch of news has to do with Jurassic World grossing $209 million over the weekend. And you compare that to Age of Ultron, that made $191 million. And it actually just beat The Avengers, which held the record for $207 million for Avengers. And then you look at Tomorrowland, which was $33 million.
All right, you take it easy on that.
You know, it's not universally loved by critics, but everyone I've heard has seen it has said it's an enjoyable movie. No one said, yeah, this is going to be a great, you know, no one's comparing it to Dark Knight as the box office and a great film. I mean, I think Patrick said it earlier when we were discussing before the show. It's not a good movie. I mean, I haven't seen it yet. The trailers, to me, turned me off to this movie. The first one was like, eh, okay, maybe. But to me, it just looked like a heap of plot holes waiting to happen in the trailer. That's why I haven't waited to see it. And that bugs me a lot. So I might not enjoy it as much as a lot of people, but I'm going to go see it the first chance I get this week. Mostly based off the gross, you know, shows people are enjoying it and the general public consensus of it being an enjoyable film.
It is a shut off your brain and just enjoy edge of your seat, thrill ride popcorn movie. It's fantastic for that. It's not a great movie, and the critics realize that. If you look at Metacritic, it actually is 1 point below Tomorrowland, who had a much worse box office. But this box office is bad news. It is bad news for Ant-Man, and it is bad news for the MCU. They just got overtaken, and I don't think in the direction they are going that they're going to be able to bring back the success of the original Avengers.
I think Guardians has a better shot of...
I don't disagree.
...doing it than the next event. I mean, maybe Infinity War if they build up everything well, but I think Guardians has a good shot of beating it. But does anybody think this record is going to hold past December?
No.
I mean, are you talking about Star Wars?
Yeah, I don't. I think Star Wars is going to have that repeat. People are going to buy Friday, Saturday, Sunday tickets in pre-order for this. As long as the next trailer doesn't suddenly look horrible, I think Star Wars is going to overtake this. Just because, I mean, these are going to keep happening with big event movies because ticket prices are going up.
Right.
You look at adjusted grosses, none of these movies, even back to like Avatar, break the top 10. I think the most recent one on there is Titanic?
I do believe, yeah, I posted that list in a Twitter fight earlier today.
And not even to say anything about, you know, what people want to see, and it's the gap is so big, but, you know, what's Tomorrowland didn't do 3D. Would its numbers have been, you know, acceptable at like another, you know, throwing another 20-30% for the 3D upcharge that a lot of places has, and it would have hit that, you know, it probably would have hit that 50 million mark that they thought it was going to.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And also if you look at the per screen record that Jurassic World also took, I mean, they only won the per screen record by $100, and if you think about $100 between now and the time that Avengers came out, that's basically the difference in the ticket price. I think it's right on par, but I mean, it's this IMAX, it's these new XD theaters, it's, you know, the ticket prices and the premium tickets are going to keep going up, so this record is going to be broken, but we're never going to see these adjusted for gross numbers move. No one is going to make the bank that Gone with the Wind did.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I will say, I think what it proves is that a lot of people really miss Jurassic Park, and they probably should have done a sequel a lot earlier.
I mean, there was a plan in the works, I remember hearing, and I see elements of it in this trailer, you know, of the Raptors being kind of the good guys. This goes back to that the plot I heard with some Dr. Doom-esque villain, you know, using dinosaurs as terror plots, and somebody decided to do it as the good guy. That was something that was a rumor, and a pretty strong one, back around 10, 11 years ago.
Yeah, is that they were writing that script that was hybrid dinosaur soldiers, and they touch on that a little bit.
And so I think there was enough coming out that they're like, you know what, maybe this will play. We found a way to make it work. We could up, you know, the whole, you know, somebody was probably reading an article and going, oh, GMO foods are a thing. Maybe we should do GMO dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Chris Pratt helped too with the success of Guardians. He was good in it. I mean, I think he probably was like the best character in that whole movie. And if that proves anything, I think it kind of proves that he's a bankable star now.
He is a full-blown movie star.
But I'll say, I thought it was fun. Like Patrick said, just leave your brain at the door. There are definitely some things that make you scratch your head when you're watching it. I mean, especially after four movies that they haven't learned anything. But it's a fun movie. I mean,
and they even have a character in there reminding them that after those previous movies, yeah, they haven't learned anything.
I will say, I mean, we recently saw The Avengers and we saw Jurassic World. And I would say that I'd want to see The Avengers again. Jurassic World I enjoyed, but I don't know if I want to see it anymore.
I'd totally see it again. I enjoyed it so much. And my wife was like, I love that movie. And I said, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was that great. And, you know, we're not going to get into spoilers for the five people, Ron being one of them, who haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I'm probably going tomorrow night or the night before this airs.
All right, so that's it with the news. And
oh, we got news?
What's that?
Figment 2, man.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I completely forgot.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly like, you know, Patrick and I have been paying attention to Jim Zub's tweets and other things, and it's exactly what we expected, but the covers already look great, and hopefully it does as well as the first one. Which was not being able to kept on shelves, even though it was short ordered, it still kept selling second prints, which was an amazing thing for, you know, a weird IP like that.
Well, I'll tell you, the Disney IP stays strong in the comic book game. I have Big Thunder Mountain on my pull list, and I am multiple issues behind because of the demand for it. It's pretty crazy, and Figment was so hard to find. It took me a long time, and I had to go to four comic book stores, I had to go to Walt Disney World, and then finally I had to go to eBay to make sure I got every single issue of the limited run. And those of you who don't know, Jim Zub is the writer of this, and he did a tremendous job. Ron and I had the opportunity to talk with him, and his passion for Figment is there. I ran into him at Special Edition New York. He was so excited to see my Figment tattoo. I was like, hey, I talked to you with my friend. He was like, oh, yeah, I remember. He probably didn't, but whatever. He really enjoys the Figment product, and he knows how important it is to the fans. He is going to do this so well. So well. I'm very excited.
And when does Figment 2 come out?
September, I believe, is the first issue.
And do we know how long the run is?
I'm guessing it's another 5 to 6 issue run.
That seems to be what Marvel likes to do. I mean, Spider-Man and the X-Men was 6, Squirrel Girl was 6. So I expect 6 will be it. But I'm just tremendously excited. This brings out my inner nerd. And really, they should let an Imagineer and Jim Zub just get their hands on the Imagination Pavilion, because they would do it right.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. I'm looking right now that issue 1 got to a third print, even through issue 5 there were second prints, let alone, you know, the hardcover, I've heard, has been hard to find.
Yeah, he had a couple hardcovers at Special Edition, and he said, you know, he was lucky to get one of his own for his own personal collection. They're really hard to find, and this shows how passionate the Disney fan can be.
And if they don't make the figure that's from the variant cover, they're just leaving money on the table.
Oh, that's definitely something to look out for in September. Figment 2. All right, so let's get into the main topic, and our main topic is going to be Star Wars Rebels. Next week, or is it this week? The Siege of Lothal, Star Wars Rebels Season 2, that's going to be premiering on June 20th, and that's Saturday, right?
Yeah, that should be Saturday.
Okay. That is Saturday, and then Teen Beach Movie next Saturday. Woo! I'm not kidding. I'm excited.
So this Saturday, June 20th, The Siege of Lothal, which is basically an episode from... It's probably a two-part episode like it was with the Spark of Rebellion for Season 1. We're all looking forward to that. And we decided we're going to talk about Star Wars Rebels Season 1 and what we all thought about it. So let's go, guys. What's your opinions on Season 1?
I went into it going, oh, it's another Star Wars cartoon. I mean, it took me a long time to get into Clone Wars. I watched the movie, which was awful. The original, you know, Clone Wars movie was bad even by prequel standards. With Smelly the Hutt or Stinky the Hutt, whatever it was.
It was Stinky.
Stinky the Hutt. Like, who thought that was a good idea even for kids? But I got into Rebels. I'm like, you know, I need to watch this show. And we sat down and watched it about halfway through the run and caught up that night. We didn't stop. The characters grip you from the beginning, and it is a story that needs to be told in canon. We, you know, never saw the rebellion before, you know, they steal the plans, and that's where this seems to be leading. It's supposed to be a 3-year run, and from everything we can tell, this takes place, the first season, 3 years before New Hope, because they say, you know, it's a 15th Empire Day, and Luke was 18 during New Hope, so it should be exactly the same time.
And this is bridging the gap from Episode 3 to Episode 4, and I wonder if we're going to see, after 7 comes out, another similar series bridging the gap between 6 and 7.
I think it's a good possibility, and I want, and because they already said, you know, this is a limited run show. We have a plot to go through. So I also wonder, you know, if things we're going to see in this are going to be affecting, you know, what we see in 7. Like, there's been talk that, is it Kylo Ren is the bad guy that we know of so far?
Yeah.
That he might be one of the Sith Inquisitors, which, you know, could make sense that, you know, finally we are in canon saying that there are these other semi-apprentices out there, and it wasn't just Vader and the Emperor. They had to have these Emperor's Hand type things. God, if they can get Mara Jade into this, that would be incredible. Because she was a great character from the books. Mm-hmm. And I think she's one of the things that needs to survive this retconning that's going on.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big thing. Is, you know, you're seeing very important characters survive the retconning, and you're also seeing very interesting stories spring forth from the new canon. Like, Kanan's story is amazing, how he survives Order 66.
Yeah, I'm reading that as we go on.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole... spoiler alert for what's, you know, we've seen in the trailers and what happened in Season 1, but if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you don't care about Season 1 spoilers, is we're going to see Ahsoka fight Vader.
Yeah.
Which is something that is going to have to be key to, you know, who Vader, like, does she know? Obviously, he knows who she is, but does he care? Are we going to see that? Because they've done a pretty good job of showing the Imperial character's perspective so far. It's not just, you know, our hero's narration.
Yeah, there's definitely some of, you know, the Empire is trying to govern to the best of their ability. They're not all horrifically completely evil. There's definitely some evil in there, but they are trying to govern and they are trying to build something.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool, too, that she's going to be fighting the James Earl Jones Darth Vader.
That's so huge.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a great job. I mean, we're forgetting one of the... It's a throwaway episode of the series. Like, you know, I rewatched it this weekend, and it was one I just skipped just because I had to get everything. I wanted to get everything in between Friday and when we were recording this on Tuesday night. Was the Lando episode?
Yeah.
No, it was great to see Lando back, but I don't know. That was one of my episodes that I wasn't too crazy about.
It seemed to be just a throwaway, hey, look, we're bringing in characters you've seen before. But it was he was in character for Lando.
Oh, yeah, no, he was great. He definitely was great. I just think there was just something about it I just wasn't crazy about.
It felt shoehorned.
The
droids felt a little more natural in their episode because we're used to seeing them somehow in everything. I know there's the comic called, you know, Tag and Bink, but which, by the way, if you could ever find, it's a great great kind of comedy take on Star Wars, but it's a very much Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead book, but I think the more Rosencrantz and Guildenstern characters are the droids, that they are such primary characters, but they're, you know, always, they're more the MacGuffins than they are the driving force from, you know, our hero's perspective, at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Spark of Rebellion first premiered, I really loved that. I was caught instantly. I mean, and I was a fan, and I was looking forward to every episode after that. And it was really good. I mean, when you think about it, every episode that followed, it just never really faltered. I mean, they did such a great job. The whole crew just gels so well, and you instantly fall in love with all of them. You see them working well together, and it brought back the feeling of the original trilogy. You saw, like, the Star Destroyers, the TIE Fighters, and the original music from Star Wars. It just was what all the fans of the original trilogy were waiting for, when they missed, and they just really did such a great job.
Yeah, and most of the designs are completely, you know, by the New Hope level design of ships and equipment and all that. There's a few things that are slightly different, like the AT-STs are a little different in this still. They haven't quite developed what they will in the next few years. There's a few different types of helmets we haven't seen. So it does, you know, feel like it's more towards that, you know, aesthetic that we're used to it being without, you know, ignoring that time passes because, you know, we saw a little bit of difference between, you know, ship designs in episode 2 and episode 3, and we saw different things in Clone Wars. But it all still feels right, which is something that they do better in this, and I think some of the shiny aesthetic that was in, you know, episode 1.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. Is episode 1 and 2, everything was very polished, and 3 it started to get a little darker. And here we're seeing, you know, bits and pieces of the technology that we do know and love. And I like how we're seeing the progress. I like how there is a lot of things, like Joe was saying, that we immediately recognize. Like, this is Star Wars. This is what we need. But it's not quite there yet. You think that, you know, they're still a few years away from finishing it and getting it perfected.
What I was going to do is I was going to go down the list of some of the major characters and, if you could, just kind of like tell me what you think about them and who they remind you of or whatever. The first one we're going to do is the main character is Ezra.
I was hesitant to, you know, that they're shoving us another, you know, child character to appeal to the child audience that they want. But it fits right. And I think, you know, Ahsoka took a little while to grow on me, too, when she came around. But a 15-year-old... in a war zone, you know, we had people lying about their age in World War II to join at that age. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, especially with Jedi powers, that these kids are going to be there. I think he's got a great motivation. I like his backstory. I think the fact that he was born on the same day as the twins is going to play a major part at some point. I think the Emperor's going to think it might be Luke.
Wow, that thought never crossed my mind until this second. But first of all, let me say this. There is no character in this show that is better than Ezra. I mean, he's good.
Oh, come on.
What?
What happened? Is it in the blood?
Actually, there's a lot of characters that are better than Ezra. I was worried we were going to get that kind of snot-nosed kid kind of thing. But he grew up in a hurry. I like his attitude. I like his spunk. I think he's better than Anakin by a long shot. He has some of those Anakin-esque issues, but he's a better Anakin than Anakin, you know?
Yeah, I felt when I first saw Ezra, he reminded me of Aladdin.
Me too!
And it's kind of like a merger of Aladdin and Luke. But he's a very likable character. Like you said, he's not a brat. He's not like Anakin that was like always whining and all that. He shows that a lot of promise in being a Jedi. And I think it's great that Kanan emerges as his master and he's the apprentice. And so far throughout the series, they've been doing a great job teaching Ezra how to become a Jedi, getting his own or making his own lightsaber. And he's a fun character. I really enjoy definitely the way he interacts with the other characters, especially Zeb. I love like when they get into heated exchanges. It's just a fun character.
Yeah, he is definitely someone who will grip your attention, and I think, and he is relatable for kids in that way. So I think I don't, you know, the problem is, are we thinking these people survive? And that's and if they do, we have to find out what happened to them even beyond this. So I'm really intrigued with all that.
All right, let's get into the next character, and that's Kanan.
You know, I'm liking Kanan more now that I'm seeing more of his backstory in the comics. I'm at issue 2. For those who don't know, he was a Padawan during Order 66, so he never really finished his training. And I think they need to show that a little bit more in the show to explain why he's so self-doubting and why he's not that perfect Jedi that we see, even, you know, in the disillusioned Obi-Wan in the future.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. I forgot that he didn't finish his training. Thanks for correcting me there.
I absolutely love Kanan. He's my favorite character on the show. I think that Freddie Prinze is doing an excellent job providing the voice work. I like how he kind of fronts that he is a full-blown Jedi, but he also has a lot to learn, and it's kind of a learning process for both he and Ezra together. Great character, and I really, really enjoy Freddie Prinze's work. I want to make sure that I get that out there because he's doing awesome.
I got to say, I was really surprised with Freddie Prinze's work, and like I agree with you. He did a great job, and I love the character of Kanan. He's just a really cool character. He's kind of like a combination of, I would say, Obi-Wan and a little bit of Han Solo. And he's almost like a big brother figure for Ezra. And he's definitely a lot of fun, especially towards the end of the series. You get to see him in a lot of trouble and how Ezra basically rescues him.
Yeah, I got really nervous when he was in trouble. I'm like, can they kill off a character in a children's show? What's planned for next season?
I mean, it's very possible that they would here. I mean, you know, otherwise, like as I said, you know, we're waiting to see if these characters live at any moment because we know what comes in the future. I mean, I think they, you know, assume even the kids watching the show have seen all the movies. So I think they were going to be like, oh, they can go because, you know, why wasn't he there at the Battle of Yavin then? Or why wasn't he, you know, with Luke on these missions? So we have to keep wondering what they're going to do at any given point.
Let's get into the next character. The next character is Hera.
To me, she's the most throwaway character on the show. I think she developed a little bit more towards the end of the season. But, you know, she's kind of that, she's more of the, she says Kanan's the leader, but she really is of the cell. But to me, she is just kind of that distant leader. She's you know, more of, I'm trying to think of a good, you know, analogy character, and it's not coming to mind, more like the Chief in Get Smart. She's not part of the team. She gives them the mission, then just disappears and comes back, you know, to just give them just enough of a clue. But I think they started working more and more of who she is into those later episodes when, you know, you find about her interactions with Fulcrum and things like that. So you find out she was more of a linchpin than we ever thought.
I'm just wondering if they're going to shoehorn a love story in with her and Ezra. It seems to be hinted at every now and then. I totally agree with you. She is the most throwaway character. She almost, to me, feels like the plot device.
Do you think Hera or Sabine?
No, Hera. I love Sabine. We'll get into Sabine. Sabine's
but
great.
The love story between her and Ezra is kind of what I'm questioning. Because
not Ezra, excuse me. Kanan.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's very clear, I think, they're together.
Yeah.
So, that's why I'm like, the shoehorning in, it's there, but I think they're the kind of the characters that, like, it is secondary to their mission.
Right.
Yeah, she reminds me of Zoe from Firefly.
Yes, I was actually thinking it's, what if Zoe and Mal were together, is kind of that feel I get from there.
Yeah, and I agree with what both of you were saying, too. I mean, there's probably going to be some romance between her and Kanan, but I don't necessarily see her as a throwaway character. I mean, I guess I kind of see her as like almost like the mother of the ship or the crew, and I really like her character. I mean, I like all the characters. I can't say anything negative about any of them, but yeah, no, I think she's a great character, and I don't know. I like her in all the episodes. All right, let's get to the next one, and that's Sabine.
Sabine's awesome. I like the attitude that she has. I like the spunk that she brings. I mean, being a Mandalorian is such a huge, huge part of the Star Wars universe. I think that's highly important. Sabine is just a fantastic character, and I kind of wish she got a little more screen time.
Yeah, she's definitely a good character and definitely a good counterbalance to the rest of the team. I think the two most no-nonsense characters are the two women on the ship, and I think that's, you know, a great thing for the show. But she's, I love the little quirks with the painting of things, but she kind of comes off as like the you know, utility knife for the thing. She's the hacker at times. She's the explosives expert. She's the secondary pilot. She is kind of everything. And I think, you know, she's still supposed to be a little young for that, but I, you know, I want to see her have more of a, she's a great all-around character, so I can't really say I want to see her have a focus, but of what her role is. But she is definitely, her role is, you know, the utility player, I guess.
Yeah, and I think she's a fun character, and I definitely, hopefully in season two, we get to find out more about her. Because, yeah, I do think she can use some more screen time. And I did go to Star Wars Weekends, and they do kind of push her a bit with Ezra as, like, characters that walk around and all that. And I think she's a strong female character and something that little girls could look up to. And she's an awesome character.
And there's the love story I hope they don't actually develop.
Me too. I know I mixed up names before, but yeah, it's definitely, I don't want to see Ezra and Sabine in puppy love. I want them to be awkward teens who, they may feel that way, but can't figure out how to express themselves properly like the rest of us, and then have a few adult beverages at the cantina and, you know, drunk communicator or something 10 years down the line.
I was thinking, you know, is it a little weird because she's definitely a few years older than him, but, you know, this whole, the whole Star Wars story is based off of, you know, a kid and a woman who's 8 years older than him getting together in his teens. I think, you know, that's the plot line to a lot of Florida headlines with school teachers. But, you know, that is what Star Wars is between Anakin and Padme. So I could see So that part doesn't bother me as much as just I would like to see that, you know, completely one-sided crush go this entire run.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't want to see a double date, too.
Yep.
That'd be a nightmare. But, all right, let's get into the next one, and the next one is Zeb.
I mean,
fun character.
Yeah, he's chewy with a little more attitude. I think he provides a nice balance, a lot of humor. I liked when we delved into his past a little bit. I thought that was an interesting episode. I think he's multi-layered. There's a lot more to go with him, but I think he's in the right spot. He's getting just enough screen time that makes you appreciate him, you know?
I definitely want more of that backstory. It's definitely intriguing what happened to the Lasats. And definitely, you know, they need to have an episode where he meets another one and they go... They haven't done flashbacks, so I don't want them to do really a flashback episode of it, but there's got to be some exposition of what happened, you know, more there. And, you know, show that he is, and I think you see it, that he is, you know, this lighthearted character to kind of cover the fact that he is part of now an endangered species.
Yeah, he's definitely, like Patrick said, he's very similar to Chewie, but we can understand what he's saying. Also, he's like a tough guy, and he's got a heart of gold, though. And like I said before, I think it's kind of fun how he kind of always kids around with Ezra, and they're always getting into fights like two little kids. And he's just a great character. He's a strong character. He's the muscle of the group. And yeah, like I said, they all gel well, and I'm really glad they included this guy in there. All right, so next one is Chopper.
I really don't like Chopper. I think their whole concept of Chopper was, oh, people like R2, the little droid with attitude. So let's go one step beyond that and give the droid all attitude. And it falls flat a few many times for me. Because I don't see the droid getting in on the pranks that go on the ship. It just... That something about that doesn't work for me.
You're saying almost a little too much personality for you.
For that droid, for an astromech?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think R2, they maybe because it seems like they just turned R2 up to 11. That's all I see with him.
I could see that. I don't disagree. I enjoy him. I think he's funny. I appreciate, you know, the continuation of the droids, but I can definitely see where you're coming from, Ron. I don't totally disagree, but he's cool with me. I'm all right with him. He's no BB-8.
We'll see about that one. But yeah, no, I agree. He's cool with me too. I mean, I like him. I remember Dave Filoni saying that it's kind of like if R2-D2 is like the family dog, Chopper is the family cat. And that kind of...
That's a fantastic reference.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. He does. He's got an attitude. He's a bit of a smart ass. But he's a fun character, though. And he does help out a lot in times of peril. And I don't know. I just like him. They needed a droid on the ship, so I'm fine with him.
Yeah, I'm happy they didn't give him... give them a protocol droid to go along with them. I mean, I think that's good and is a little different that we never really get someone continuously translating for him. And he did definitely have different personality like traits in different episodes, but sometimes just the prankster just doesn't sit right with me. I don't know why.
But I understand that too. And one of the main villains for season one is Agent Kallus.
It's good to see, you know, Imperial characters who aren't Vader and the Emperor. You can't run an empire without, you know, agents. And Kallus is definitely a different type of villain we've seen for these movies, and he does well with it. He is kind of that true, you know, True Believer, which soldier, which is, you know, can be really dangerous in these kind of situations.
Yeah. I mean, we need these slimy government people because at the end of the day, as much as we want to see the Empire as, you know, soldiers, they also need rank and file, and they need people who are governing this giant solar system that they're governing.
Yeah, I mean, he's your typical Imperial villain. And, I mean, he fits in fine with the series and all that. And no, I think he's a good villain, though. I mean, he's definitely someone that, I mean, he's not overly scary, but he's a definite threat, and he works well with the series.
And he's more interesting than, you know, I think he was more interesting than the Inquisitor as far as the character goes.
Really? Because I really liked the Inquisitor, and I was sad that he bit it. I was a big fan of his.
Yeah, let's get into him, the Inquisitor.
I think he just plays it as another Sith, and he is just, you know, he kind of comes off as a little Darth Maul 2.0 at times. I mean, obviously a little more developed, but he is just kind of that, shows up menacing, does what the Emperor says, kind of deus machina kind of villain. I think Kallus was more interesting because he was more human, and, you know, he's doing more of a job kind of thing.
I don't agree. I mean, I feel like he actually has more personality, definitely more personality than Maul. I feel like there's a much more sinister side to him. While sometimes I feel like the Sith are evil for evil's sake, he seems to revel in his evil a little bit. And I appreciated that. I appreciated the extra bit of personality. I thought he was a very interesting foil, and I liked him a lot.
Yeah, I agree with Patrick. I mean, I really liked him. And Jason Isaacs did such a great job as his voice. And I'm definitely going to miss him. I mean, I was really kind of shocked. That was actually shocking, because I'm not used to seeing something like that in a children's cartoon.
Well, especially because they have so much merchandise for him. I figured this was a character they were going to milk for a little bit.
Yeah, it's a bit of a downer.
Or, you know, I wonder if he is done. I mean, I wonder if there's going to be a clone, you know. We don't know any backstory, so we don't really know where he came from.
True. There's always that possibility.
And like we mentioned in the beginning, we're going to see like the first episode of season 2 this weekend, The Siege of Lothal. And we only seen like a little bit of it. We've seen a trailer. I guess that was from Star Wars Celebration. And it looks great. I mean, the thing that sticks out is Darth Vader seems like he's going to be the main villain this time around. And I'm really looking forward to that. I heard that Sarah Michelle Gellar is joining the cast.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I recently heard a rumor that she might play Princess Leia.
Interesting.
A young Princess Leia. All
right. Listen, I got a rant, and I know we're talking about Star Wars Rebels, and I'm going to tie this back into our last episode, and I'm getting very, very frightened with the way Disney is playing fast and loose with the canon of characters that have a history beyond them. How would they like it if Marvel put out a Mickey Mouse comic book that said Mickey Mouse was, you know, created when he fell into a batch of radioactive cheese or something? I'm very worried with the direction Disney is taking at times. I get it. Leia probably has to be in it. I don't know why they can't get Carrie Fisher. Her voice is going to sound
like a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah, okay, I could see that.
But it's just a rumor. I mean, we don't know for sure.
I know. But these things, man, listen, if you talk to Derek Bergen especially, he'll tell you I'm Pixie Duster number one, but I do have some concerns and some consideration about what they're going to do, so I'm very interested to see. You know, I'm kind of glad, Lando was kind of just there and just kind of saying, hey, here's Lando. And he didn't do anything that was, like, changing Lando from who we knew. So if Leia's there and she's still Leia, I won't mind it. Like, I read these comic books, and these are fantastic writers that are writing these books. Jason Aaron is incredibly talented, and they're just missing the mark. I think they're totally missing the mark, and I gave up on them before they decided to play fast and loose and introduce Han Solo's wife.
Which is one panel reference. We have no idea what's
going
on.
I'm angry. No, I agree. I would like to see how it played out. I actually had an email from Disney that was like, so, about that Star Wars comic. And I didn't read it because I was mad. But I'm sure there's an explanation. I just get nervous. These are characters who have stood the test of time, and I don't want unnecessary parts of their character being brought about.
Well, Leia might have been a senator by this point, for all we know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just about to take over from Bail Organa, who we've already seen. Did Jimmy Schmitz do the voice, or no?
No, he didn't.
I couldn't tell. It sounded like him, but, I mean, it's not hard to do a Jimmy Schmitz.
Yeah. No, I actually looked that up. He didn't do it. Like, you got, you know, Anthony Daniels did C-3PO, and Frank Oz did Yoda.
That's awesome.
And I'm sure Ben Burtt does R2 still, but, or at least,
I mean,
you gave him the soundboard.
I was about to say, you can have an R2-D2 soundboard.
But I still love the fact that R2-D2 is Wally. Hmm. Same voice. Still one of my favorite things. But, I mean, I think we need to see some other characters at some point. I think we need to see Mon Mothma. We need to see Ackbar. We need to see those people who were really the linchpins of founding the Alliance. Because as we are seeing now, they are going... I think the next two seasons are, we see them going from operating as cells to operating as an army.
Mm, interesting. All right. You're selling me. You're selling me, but I'm still very cautious. Like, I enjoy seeing these characters outside of the trilogy, but I want them to act as I think they're supposed to act. It really bothers me that when I'm on Star Tours, Ackbar doesn't say, it's a trap.
Well, you know what's going to really bother you? What if Princess Leia ends up having a romance with Ezra?
I mean, that's going to really bother me. Why would you even bring that up? Now I'm mad. Now I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight because I'm angry at things that haven't actually happened. Fantastic.
That don't contradict anything we've ever seen. They're contradicting your own fan fiction, Patrick.
You leave my fan fiction out of here. One day I'm going to make millions of dollars like that idiot who wrote 50 Shades.
Rule 34, Patrick. Rule 34.
I'm not speaking to Ron for the rest of the show, Joe.
Okay. Well, you won't have far to go.
Oh, good.
Because, yeah, we're all looking forward to the Siege of Lothal, and that'll be this weekend. And we'll probably definitely go into detail next time we get together on that one. And that's about it with our main topic of Star Wars Rebels. So,
how did we go and not mention Captain Rex?
Oh, that he's
in there. Yeah, seriously! I forgot all about that!
Like, not Captain Rex. Like, okay, given that a Clone Wars series had Captain Rex. No, like, the pilot Captain Rex, like, they were actually on a Star Tours ship at some point.
Yeah, that was so cool. I completely forgot about that. Oh, man. I just love the references, and right now, they're referential in a way that's reverential and paying respect to the source material. I just worry when they get out of that zone. Makes me nervous. Now I'm not talking to Ron.
Okay.
All right.
And
what?
And now we're going to end this topic. So with that, this will be the end of episode 6 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. And can you guys tell me where we can find Nerd Alert on Twitter?
Sure. You can find at Nerd Alert Pod and nerdalertpod @gmail.com if you guys want to contact us. We're going to try and use the Twitter a bit more to discuss, you know, whenever there's some more breaking comic, movie, Star Wars-y news. We're hoping to use that a little bit more.
If we can get to a decent amount of followers, I will happily tweet my experience during Star Wars Rebels premiere. I'm not going to do it live, but I will do it while I'm watching it. I will tweet away, and you can watch along with me if you so choose.
This weekend?
Not this weekend. I will, as soon as I watch it. I will let the fans know if we get some followers at Nerd Alert Pod.
Yeah, at Nerd Alert Pod for that. I'm at Gracie's Butler if anybody wants to contact me.
I am at Hack LaSalle. Caution, I use bad words sometimes.
And I'm nowhere. But here. And with that, this is the end of episode 6. Thanks for joining us, and hope to see you next time.
Stay nerdy.